Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capo Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Frankie.
How are you this morning?
Well.
You sure you seem a little businesslike.
I'm well. What do you got for me?
It seems as though the FDA has changed their mind. One of the tricky things about cooking to a meat thermometer is if you buy a meat thermometer, you know, one of those ones you stick into the bird, and you follow the meat thermometer's guide for when the bird is done, if you're sort of a person from the Midwest.
No, I got a funny story.
Tell us the if you let it go to where the meat thermometer says it's safe, it's safe. But I don't want
to
eat it.
I'm going to tell you that my mother-in-law follows those guidelines
to the T.
And here's what happens when you follow the guidelines, the old guidelines, and what Francis is brought to us is that there are some new guidelines. But if you follow the old guidelines to the letter of the law,
if you cook a chicken internally to 180 degrees,
let's say a turkey,
to 180 degrees,
you were supposed to cook it to 180 degrees. Okay, one of the things that we in the restaurant business know that somehow didn't get disseminated to the rest of the world is there's a thing called carryover cooking. And what that means is once you take that bird or that loin of pork or whatever out of the oven, it will continue to get hot
On
the inside, it will continue to, the temperature inside will continue to raise as much as 5 or even 10 degrees some things. And once you brought something up to 180 degrees, chances are it's going to go up to 190 degrees in internal temperature. Now, I want you to think about eating turkey whose meat has been at the temperature of boiling, okay?
Boiling, yeah, exactly.
It's 212 is when water boils.
Right.
Okay, and realize that there's no possible way there's going to be any moisture in it because all the moisture is going to have evaporated out, and it's going to be terrible.
Well, here's the deal. Chefs know, and real cooks know, that, you know, look, anybody who publishes a cookbook, you need to be very careful because people don't want to get sued.
Right.
And listen, I'm hereby ever telling everybody what you need to do, because I don't want to get sued, is cook the food to the USDA guidelines.
Right.
Cook it all.
Always cook it to the USDA.
Don't you care what it tastes like.
But there's some new USDA guidelines that just came out.
Well,
chicken and poultry is a good one, I think.
But
can all be a little happier.
But here's the deal with cooking things to the USDA guidelines. I mean, even now in some cases. Yeah, it's totally safe, but it's well done. You don't want everything well done. So chef's been saying it's not necessary to cook poultry to 180 degrees to make sure it's safe. And finally, after years of ruined Thanksgiving dinners, they've lowered the temperature from 180 to 165. Please bring this article to your mother-in-law's next
you better believe
Thanksgiving
it.
Dinner.
I'm going to bring it highlighted. What, are you kidding me?
So this is an article from the Star Ledger that's reporting on it. They called the Food Safety and Inspection Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and talked to Kathy Bernard. She's the project manager for USDA Meat and Poultry Hotline, and the reassessment down to 165 is perfectly safe to eat, but personal preferences may lead some chefs to keep on cooking. I doubt it. Not chefs. Not chefs, not keeping cooking. So what they did, the Star Ledger looked at the other the USDA recommendations, and they agreed with some and they didn't agree with others. And they have some really good advice here, and so I want to cover some of it. For example, officially the feds advise that meat remain in the refrigerator until the minute you're ready to cook at it. But the Star Ledger, they advocate taking the steak or pork loin out 30 to 60 minutes before they plan on grilling. That allows the meat to shake off the chill and relax a little bit for better and more even grilling.
Which is important, that the meat actually relax and not be so chilled when you cook it will make a difference in your cooking.
And actually they called
in flavor.
When they asked in the USDA hotline, they asked if this was okay. And she said, You know what? If you leave it out for a little while, it's perfectly safe. But you don't want to let the meat, and this is very serious at home, you don't want to let the meat sit at a temperature that encourages bacteria growth, okay? So you don't want it between 40 and 140 degrees for more than 2 hours. That doesn't mean you can't leave it on the counter for half an hour.
That's an important note. It said for more than 2 hours.
What it does mean is you don't want partially cooked meat. Mm-hmm. When you're ready to cook it, cook it. Don't mark stuff off and hold it. And if you have restaurants out there, that happens sometimes in restaurants.
People do it with things like, and you definitely can't do it with things like chicken. You want to start with raw chicken and cook it all the way through.
And we say that we want to mark things on the grill. Listen, you want to mark your grilled vegetables on the grill? You mark them on the grill and hold them
right,
on the side. That's fine. But you got to get it over 140 degrees. This we all agree on, and I'm Mr. Rare, okay? Now, there are different temperatures for different meats, and the Star Ledger did a number of things. They say this, the USDA says the safe cook temperature of a solid cut of meat is lower than that for ground meat, because if you have ground meat, you have more surface area.
Right, we talked about this before.
On the outside that can cause problems, whereas a solid piece of meat, basically the problem is on the outside, and as long as that gets to the right temperature, you're okay. They did in the test kitchens of the Star Ledger. They cooked a whole chicken to 165 degrees that they say oozed with juices that indicates it's done. It was much more tasty than the one grilled to the 180 degrees. Duh.
this is not news.
The difference was even more pronounced with pork. They grilled one pork loin to USDA recommended 160 degrees and another to 150 degrees suggested by several chefs. It turns out the chefs are right, duh. The one cooked to the lower temperature was significantly more moist and flavorful, and then next they did a filet mignon. And they did 145 degrees, as the USDA recommends, and 125 degrees. They said the 145-degree one wasn't bad, but the 125-degree one was much better. So, listen, you know, if you've read Anthony Bourdain's book, Kitchen Confidential, you know that when you have meat really, really well done, like really well done, honestly,
it loses a lot of nuance.
Well, and you know what? If you like it that way, you like it that way. I'm not passing judgment on anybody,
but I have advice for you. One of the things that a lot of restaurants and a lot of restaurant owners and a lot of people who work in restaurants, the idea is I'm going to cook it my way and you're going to eat it that way. Francis and I are not of that belief. You want a well-done steak and that's the way you like to eat it, enjoy it. Have it that way.
But honestly, does every restaurant hold the slightly lesser cuts of meat? Because, you know what, even if you buy all great meat, some is better than others, you
right.
know? Do you hold
it
the
is a continuum.
Do you hold the slightly lesser cuts of meat for the well done? Yes. Do you know why? Because, look, I make my living on my palate, and so does Mark. And when it's cooked well done, I can't tell you the difference between a pretty good piece of meat and an awesome piece of meat. They're all the same when you cook them
that
much.
You can tell the difference between a pretty good piece of meat and a terrible piece of meat. But the difference between that super top end, that last 5% that, frankly, we're going for in a super premium restaurant, is you can't really tell it.
And my advice to you, frankly, is if you like your steaks well done, don't spend a lot of money on your steaks.
Right.
Get steaks that are reasonably good, but don't, you know, and the difference between good and very good is, you know, 20% in price. The difference between very good and the best Kobe steak you're going to find is, you know, a lot of money.
Double, triple, quadruple sometimes.
And if you like rare steak, it's worth it because you can see, and you like that, you can see the difference. But you cannot see the difference in a well-done steak. So it's not passing judgment. It's just saying, you know, if you like well-done steak, there's no reason to spend that extra money, and God bless you.
It's mostly because of the fat in the steak, and all that fat is getting rendered out, and you don't taste it.
And you can wear it as a shoe. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Don Loria. He owns a restaurant in Tucson, Arizona called Terracotta. But more interestingly, he's the president of the Council of Independent Restaurants of America, or CIRA, and he's also the founding chairman of Tucson Originals and an organization called Dine Originals. Don, what is Dine Originals?
Well, Dine Originals is actually the branding name that we're using for the Council of Independent Restaurants of America. CIRA is our legal incorporated name, but we're referring ourselves now nationally as Dine Originals.
Okay. Now, what does Dine Originals do? What does CIRA do?
We are obviously a nonprofit. We are trying very hard to support independent restaurants across America. We try to encourage the dining out public to eat at independent restaurants, to support the independent restaurants in their community. We also do things to help restaurants themselves have more money at the end of the day by trying to level the playing field on the purchasing side of the restaurant business.
So is this your answer to, like, the big chains coming in and taking over every city in America?
Oh, you got it. Right on.
We operate a couple of independent restaurants, and we do a lot of consulting for independent restaurants. And, well, and our friends all work in independent restaurants, and we care about dining, so independent restaurants matter. So we talk a lot on this show about the sustainable agriculture, keeping the family farmer on the farm, things like that. But we also have to remember that the independent restaurateur, we're spoiled here in Jersey, where we have, in addition to the, you know, the 27 million different chain restaurants we have around, we have a lot. I sat on the board of directors of the New Jersey Restaurant Association for about 10 years, and we're still active in that great organization. But we're different than the other state restaurant associations, and this comes up all the time when we would go to the National Restaurant Association meeting, because we're mostly independent operators, but most of the country and the restaurant associations of most of the country are dominated by these large chains or big franchisees of these very large chains.
And they're representing, you know, their needs as opposed to the small restaurant owners.
How do you, Don, and how does Dine Originals, how does that organization work to help the small guys stay alive?
Well, we have what I refer to as three goals. The first one is butts in seats. How can we get more diners in our restaurants as opposed to chain restaurants? Our second goal is money at the end of the day, and that goes back to leveling the playing field. How can we help independent restaurateurs get the kind of prices that chains get? And our third goal, which is actually an emerging goal, is employee retention. What can we do to create benefits for our employees so that they will stay at independent restaurants and not jump ship for 15 cents an hour?
And one of the things that I think that a lot of people don't realize is that that is more of a goal of the independent restaurant than it is for the chain restaurant. The chain restaurant, unless you're one of those management personnel, they just don't seem as concerned about maintaining their personnel and retaining their personnel as do the independent restaurateurs.
And when you talk about butts and seats, remember, you operate the little hamburger joint, and yeah, your hamburgers are great, and you put all this blood, sweat, and tears, but the Burger King, which is around the corner, and granted, people who own one or two franchises of these fast food joints are sometimes in as bad a situation as anybody else, because it's hard to be a small franchisee, but when you're going up against, you know, you own Pal's Cabin in West Orange, there's a Burger King commercial on the air, on the radio, on the air, on the television, on the billboard, on the side of the road. You can't afford that. So how do you, Don, help independent restaurants who can't afford national television advertising campaigns?
We don't have a king catching passes
right.
In
no,
the end zone.
You can't even afford your own. You can't even afford your own clown. You know what I'm saying? So how do you help independents to get butts in seats? And, you know, let's face it, we're talking about getting people to change their mind, and instead of choosing a chain, to choose an independent restaurant. How do you get those butts in seats, Don?
Well, I think, number one, the overall goal is to get on their radar screen. I think typically when people decide they're going to go out to eat, they think about, well, do I want Italian? Do I want Mexican? Or they think about the price points. Is this a special occasion, or I just want to, you know, get in and out? They don't think about, you know, should I be supporting the independent restaurants in my community? We need to get on their radar screen. Dine Originals has been very, very lucky in getting great PR. We just had a major two-page piece in Time Magazine, the May 15th issue, which talked about what we're doing. But also in the way of advertising, by banding together, we can get better rates. We can get a one-page rate and then split it up among four or eight independent restaurants, and they all can take advantage of the better rate.
Sure, the economies of scale.
Yeah.
Well, and let's talk about one of the other goals of your organization, which is at the end of the day to have more dollars for independent restaurateurs. A lot of people think that independent restaurateurs, you know, are wealthy. Some do quite well. Most fail. But there's a huge swath of independent restaurateurs who probably at the end of the day with their house on the line, a lot of heartache and working a million hours, are making as much at the end of the year as if they just quit and took a job for the local hotel doing what they do anyway. People stay in it for the love of it. I mean, do you find that's the case, man?
I agree with you. I think the restaurant business is a business of pennies. And it's you talk about an exit plan. I think a lot of restaurateurs would like to come up with an exit plan that doesn't include the word death.
Yeah, it's long hours. Hey, we're going to have to take a quick break, but keep listening. Our guest is Don Luria. He owns a restaurant in Tucson, Arizona, but he's also the founding chairman of Tucson Originals and the Council of Independent Restaurants of America. We're talking about independent restaurants versus chain restaurants. Buy food from people, not corporations. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Kathleen showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Don Luria. He is with the Council of Independent Restaurants of America, and we're talking about some of the challenges facing independent restaurants. We have a lot of you independent restaurateurs out there listening, and people work for independent restaurateurs, and some of you are foolish enough to want to open one day. So listen to what we have to say, because this stuff is really important. You're in a very competitive marketplace out there.
Don, restaurateurs are notoriously the most pig-headed entrepreneurs on the planet.
Mark is the most pig-headed restaurateur, as a matter of fact.
How do you get these different, very, very different personalities with their way or the highway thinking together on the same page?
Let me rephrase that question just a little more amusingly. How do you get 12 restaurateurs and their egos in the same room?
it's funny because I travel almost every other week around the country, meeting with, usually starting off with small groups of restaurateurs, anywhere from six to a dozen. And I almost always start my talk by saying, you know, they don't call us independents for nothing. And I also think on my gravestone it's going to say, he died herding cats.
Yes.
It is not easy. But the interesting thing is that the attitude has changed in the last couple of years. You know, 10 years ago, I tell people I would not talk to another restaurateur in Tucson because I'd be afraid they were going to steal my wife's recipes or they were going to try to copy some kind of program we have. And now it's recognizing that the chains are the ones that are creating problems for independent restaurants, and other independent restaurateurs should be our best friends.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think Dine Originals has been very, very successful in that area. We now have 19 chapters. I think our 20th chapter, Denver, Colorado, is going to be coming on board shortly, with well over 700 restaurants across the country. We our 700 restaurants, we feel, do about $1.4 billion a year, and we purchase about $450 million.
That's great.
So we, you know, are becoming a force. And that actually has enabled us to get our foot in the door talking to major corporations and getting better prices.
And, you know, that it's very important. And listen, the restaurant business, even if you're not in the restaurant business, you got to understand that the restaurant business is one of the last bastions of small business. Try and open up an independent hardware store, it's not going to fly because some major chain is going to put you right out of business. We have to make sure that, you know, dining is a central part of life. Eating food together and coming together as a community is a central part of life, and you should have more options than just being able to go to a corporate chain. Our guest is Don Luria. He is president of the Council of Independent Restaurants of America. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Don Loria. He owns his own restaurant out in Tucson, Arizona called Terracotta, but he's also president of the Council of Independent Restaurants of America, and their trade name is Dine Originals. So we were talking before the break about how independent restaurants, it's one of the last parts of society where if you want to open up a business and make something and sell it and make a living at it and be a part of the community, you can still do that in a restaurant in many parts of the country. It's harder and harder to sort of have that American dream. And again, I've said it in the last segment and I'll say it again. Most of the guys, men and women that I know who run independent restaurants or chefs at independent restaurants that are looking for a mark of quality could make as much or more money doing closing their places and going to work for the local hotel or chain with none of the risk and fewer hours.
And then you'd get benefits.
And then, right, exactly. And you know, when a chain, even if the chain hotel closes and you're out of job, in most cases, if your restaurant closes, you're out of job and they've taken your house away and you're bankrupt.
I mean, I think people don't realize. I mean, I spend almost $13,000 a year myself out of my pocket on health insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing else other than health insurance for me and my family.
So when we talk about small restaurants banding together to have a fight for survival, I think that's a very important thing to do. And especially out, you know, in New Jersey, we have a lot of restaurants, and we have a restaurant association that's focused on independent operators. But outside, the Dine Originals really brings a lot to the table. Now, how do you work together to get better pricing, and what kind of things can you buy as a unit? And because remember, the chains, by the way, you know, if you buy four pallets with 32 cases each of Absolut vodka, you're going to get a much better price, maybe half of what happens when your independent restaurant buys six bottles of Absolut for their weekend wedding. You know, so what kind of things do you combine to help restaurants get better prices on?
I think that, you know, the most exciting thing that's going on with Dine Originals right now is we have just, within the last 2 months, signed an agreement with Avendra. Avendra is one of the largest group purchasing organizations in this country. It was formed, I think, about 7 years ago by Marriott, the Four Seasons, Hyatt, Club Corp, basically to provide procurement services for hotels. And they've been very, very successful. They do over $2 billion a year in procurement, but they've never wanted to deal with independent restaurants because, you know, our drop sizes are considerably smaller. Our credit, you know, risks are significantly greater.
Mm-hmm.
But we have just signed an agreement with them, and we're test marketing a program in Houston, Texas with our Houston chapter, where 14 of the Houston Originals have banded together and basically have agreed to buy through Avendra distributors. They don't buy from Avendra. They buy through Avendra designated distributors.
They
order from the broadliner or the dairy or the produce company that Avendra has negotiated prices with. And they get national prices.
Wow, that's amazing.
And we're very excited about this program, very, very pleased to be partnering with such a great corporation. And we think it's going to be very successful in Houston, and we hope within the next couple months to begin rolling it out in other chapters around the country.
So with all those extra risks and extra costs that you're talking about that we create for the vendor, what's the reason that they would ship to us? What's the reason that they would want us to be part of this organization?
Well, I think that, you know, the advantage is that a produce company or a dairy company, they're also businesses of pennies. But if they can increase their business by dealing with independent restaurants as a group, you don't bank a percentage, you bank real dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can increase their business, double it or quadruple it by dealing with many restaurants, then they can afford to give better prices. They can afford to give the kind of prices that they may be giving to Burger King or McDonald's.
Our guest, by the way, so if you just tuned in, is Don Loria. He is the president of the Council of Independent Restaurants of America, and we're talking about a deal that he's just struck for the first time with one of the major vendors to get his member restaurants, his independent member restaurants, who've banded together to get better pricing, pricing that allows them to compete on a price perspective with the national chains. Now, if you're a restaurateur and you're listening out there, you hear us talk about sourcing local stuff a lot, and we believe in dealing with your local farms and dealing with your local vendors. But you know what? Everybody out there buys toilet cleaner. Everybody out there buys paper products. Everybody out there, you have to buy your furniture polish. And dry goods like that, we like to buy. We don't feel the need to source them locally. And other, you may not realize out there in listener land, that one of the most difficult things to do is to compare prices in the stuff that you're buying, because these little purveyors and these, you know, big purveyors that will deal with us, they don't have a price list, a set price list, where you would think you could go on and say, okay, I'll take one of these and it'll be that much, I would take two of those and it'll be that much, and everybody gets the same prices. They have this flexible, weird pricing, so you order the stuff, and then they tell you how much it's going to cost. But maybe they charge the guy around the corner less than you, and so but they charge you more on dish detergent but less on towels. And so you say, hey, listen, I got a better price from this guy on the dish detergent. They say, fine, we'll meet that price. But then they raise the price on towels, and it puts you as the independent operator. You could have somebody working full-time, and these big companies do, just trying to compare apples to apples. I mean, you could spend 70 hours a week trying to get, you know, your Comet for your cleaner for your bathroom at a decent price. And, you know, it's really hard to be an independent restaurateur and have the time to do all that paperwork. And if you've got national pricing and it's set and you're sure that it's competitive, wow, that's a huge advantage.
You can pay more attention to the food that's coming out of your kitchen too.
Exactly.
And the service.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we say a lot on this show is, so much of my day, people are like, oh, I love your job. It's the best job in the world. I want to be you. And
then you're comparing Comet prices.
and I tell people all the time, from 5:30 to midnight, let's say, when the customers are in the restaurant, that's the best part of my day, the most fun part of my day. The hardest part of my day is when I got to sit for 5 or 6 hours behind my desk and do the numbers and do the paperwork and do the ordering and pay the bills and all of that other stuff. And if there's an organization that can help me alleviate some of that shopping or price comparing that we have to do on frankly products that I don't care at all about, okay?
Right.
Because I don't care about my Comet or my Pledge or my paper towels that much. What I care about is my chicken. So if there's a company out there that'll help me help aggregate some of those other products so that I don't have to think about the pricing on them anymore, that could be a big help to me.
Yeah, it's a really good point. With our agreement with the vendor, we also have an agreement with a small purchasing company in Houston, Texas, and they're the ones that watch the prices and make sure that they're getting the best product and the best prices.
I think that's a tremendous advantage, because independent restaurants don't have time. There are positions in larger restaurants or hotels called purchasers, and their job is to make sure that you're not getting screwed on price.
That would be one of the 17 or 18 different job titles I have at our restaurants.
Well, you know, I think one of the interesting things that you said that you touched on earlier that I think is great is that many people who own independent restaurants, when people looked at things, at information as very proprietary, and they wouldn't want to talk to another restaurateur, and they looked at each other with great suspicion. One of the nice things that I've seen that's changed around in the restaurant business, and there are still a few guys who I don't like the things they do, so I'm leery of them, but most people will come together in a collaborative effort, because most people realize that even if you're in the same town, if you're busy, that doesn't mean that my customers are going to your restaurant instead of my restaurant. It means the town's busier and people are going to independent restaurants, and a rising tide lifts all boats.
I see that more in the forward-thinking people in this business than maybe the more short-sighted ones.
Yeah, I have no problem calling up the owner of a restaurant that's maybe 300 yards from me and say, how was your business this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
We were a little off. And he'll say, you know, we were a little slow too. Well, you know, I feel bad being off, but I know if everyone's off, it's not that I'm doing something wrong.
Right, you don't want to call home and say, no, we're busy as heck. You must be doing something wrong. Hey, hold on one second. We'll be back in just a moment. We have to take a short break. Our guest is Don Laurier. He's the president of the Council of Independent Restaurants of America. We're talking about your local restaurants buying food from people in your community. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's an approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, with Stage Lust and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Don Luria owns a restaurant in Tucson, Arizona, and more importantly to us, because we're not in Tucson, Arizona, we're very far away from there. He's the president of the Council of Independent Restaurants of America, and it's an organization that brings together independent operators who operate usually on wafer-thin margins to be able to compete a little more handily with the national chains who are trying to take our market, darn it. Don, how do people find out about your organization? We have a lot of restaurateurs who listen to the show. People want to get involved, or if people are consumers, want to support local restaurants. How do they find out about you?
Well, we have a great website. It's www.dineoriginals.com. It'll tell you where we have chapters. We have 19 chapters all across the country. Newest chapters are in San Diego, Denver, Cincinnati, Nashville, Houston. So we're expanding very rapidly. They can also contact me by email, president@dineoriginals.com.
And we'll put all that on our website. You can link to Don through us. Don, when are you coming to New Jersey, man?
Well, I'm probably going to be back east in towards the end of July. I just came back from Madison, Wisconsin.
We don't consider Madison, Wisconsin back east out here in New Jersey, just so you know, Don.
Well, from Arizona, it's still a long way. But, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia, so I'm an Eastern heart. I've been in Arizona since 81, but all of my previous life, none of which was in the restaurant business, has been on the East Coast.
Have you learned your lesson yet?
No, when people ask me how I got in the restaurant business, I told them I came to Arizona and I sat in the sun a little bit too long.
Now, when people, you have an interesting way that people pay dues in the organization, how people join your organization. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, because all nonprofits struggle with sources of funds. And I think in the first 5 years,
some for-profits also struggle with sources for funds.
We changed our dues structure every year. We have a really interesting and great program that raises money for the individual chapter and also pays their national dues, and they never have to write a single check. And it's called our gift certificate program. And each member restaurant in a chapter agrees to honor 52 $50 gift certificates a year. They're issued four times a year, so 13 $50 gift certificates, or it could be 26, $25 gift certificates, depending on the restaurant and the market they're in. And these gift certificates are made available at anywhere from a 30 to 40% discount online at a specific time. And it's not an auction. The price is set. But in Tucson, one of our, we call it an auction, even though it isn't an auction, one time we sold $20,000 worth of gift certificates in 15 minutes.
Wow.
We were getting 100 hits a second. And it not only drives business to our restaurants, but it creates a buzz in the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of bringing in new people, and it's a way of thanking our existing customers.
So for our listeners who might be going out to Tucson or Houston or wherever who want to buy some of these gift certificates, how would they go about doing it?
Go to our website. You'll be able to check and see what chapters are doing their auctions. And sometimes we don't even announce when it's available. I know we had one chapter that put their things online at 2 a.m. in the morning just to slow down the demand.
That would actually be perfect for me.
Yeah, the restaurant guy's up late.
That's what I'm checking my email.
Well, the website we're talking about is dineoriginals.com. Our guest is Don Laurier. We're talking about how independent restaurants can band together. I think it's tremendous also. I mean, restaurateurs love to pay for things in trade because you don't have the cash up front. And cash flow is a huge problem for restaurateurs. And I think it's a very innovative and original way to make it happen and for people to get a great value off it. We were talking before about independent restaurants having a certain amount of camaraderie and taking the long view that, you know, friendly competition is not bad for your business and, in fact, can be good for your business. You can cross-promote because people are never going to eat at the same restaurant 7 nights in a row. But, you know, we have a lot of folks, we have a lot of consulting clients, we have a lot of folks that are just friends of ours who own restaurants, and we share information and purveyors and things like that all the time. But there are a couple of folks who we don't really have much truck with and we don't really like to hang out with because I think there's a certain etiquette if you want to have friendly competition. And I think that etiquette is, you know, if you come into my bar and you're a local restaurateur and you offer my bartender a job at your place, we're not friends anymore. You know, do you find that people are very respectful of those lines? What kind of lines do you see?
Yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, I think it's almost the opposite. When we need someone, we will put it on our local chapter website or do a blast email. You know, we're looking for a dishwasher, we're looking for a prep cook, and because people are always changing or moving around. So we actually help people find jobs and
yep.
get jobs.
But are there lines that are crossed? I mean, there are certain things that just like, you don't take from another restaurant. You know, like you don't walk in and sit in someone's dining room and offer their waiter a job. You don't walk into someone's kitchen and say, hey, listen, come work for me, I'll pay you $10 more a week. You know?
Absolutely.
It's unfortunate when people cross that line because there's so much to be gained for having a restaurant community that can come together. But once somebody does something like that once or twice, you're like, my restaurant's not playing softball with your restaurant,
sure.
So you can scout my employees. That's not going to happen.
In New Brunswick, there's certainly two factions of restaurants. One that kind of tries to stay away from poaching other people's restaurants, and some that definitely are poachers.
It's interesting in any sort of association of restaurants. Like you said, if you have a room big enough to get in a dozen restaurateurs and their egos, you've got quite a big room indeed. Our guest is Don Laurier. He's with the Council of Independent Restaurants of America, and we'll be talking more with him in just a moment. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Don Laurier. He's with Dine Originals, which is the trade name for the Council of Independent Restaurants of America.
Don, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Why don't you get paid for this?
I would like to. This, I've been working for a year as president of this organization, and it's about time. But it is a passion of mine. I never thought I would be in the restaurant business, and now as one of the spokespersons for independent restaurants, I enjoy it, and I enjoy meeting the people who are in the restaurant business. They're really a great group of people.
Lots of personalities.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's a unique person that's drawn to open their own restaurant. It's a person who says, you know what? And again, I'll say it, if you're making any money at all operating your own restaurant, you could be making more money doing something else. That's a lot easier. But this is a passion, and it's about... And it's an important place in our society. Your local restaurateur, and if you have an option when you're going out tonight to go to a Benihana or a Hooligans or a Hooligans or whatever the hell it's called, and you have the local tavern where you can get a burger, the local tavern's owned by somebody who's a member of your community, and it's really important. That's what dining is all about. And people who operate their own restaurants have a desire and a need to feed people, be with people, provide a locus of community, a place where people can come together. And that's what's important. And, Don, that sounds to me like what you're pursuing as well.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Hey, Don, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you. You're welcome. My pleasure.
The organization is the Council of Independent Restaurants of America. Maybe you should go to their website if you're an independent operator. Maybe there's a chapter in your area. Maybe you should start a chapter
in
your
area. And
you
should also go to their website, even if you're planning on visiting one of these cities that they operate in, because you can buy gift certificates to some of these restaurants that are their members and save yourself 20, 30, 40% on some of those gift certificates.
DineOriginals.com, the Council of Independent Restaurants of America. Don Luria is the president, and I think the work they do is great. The work they do is really tremendous and has a lot to do. I mean, we have a contemporary American superfine dining restaurant that's on the highest end of the price point, and we have a more casual upscale Italian restaurant. What they both have in common is they're both our restaurants, and they're a part of the community, and those things are really, really important. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.